Hey, this is Vivian Campbell, and you are listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey, Metalheads, welcome to episode 274 of Focus on Metal. And it is a big week for Richie this week, as we have on the show, Vivian Campbell from the original Dio band, as well as Last in Line, and then this little old band called Def Leppard. Of course, this week, Vivian is on the show to talk all about the brand new Last in Line release called Heavy Crown. If you haven't picked yourself up a copy yet, do yourself a favor, go out and get the deluxe CD DVD edition. Great DVD in here. Probably one of the best ones that I have seen on one of these extended deluxe digipacks. Also this week, we sit down with Rayman James, founder and bassist of Minnesota's own Malice. So lots of ground to cover this week. So with that in mind, I'm going to forego track of the week and get right into talking with some artists. So as I said about 8 seconds earlier, first guest up this week is Vivian Campbell. He's here to talk all about the brand new release from Last in Line called Heavy Crown. One of the cool things in the interview, listen closely for it, is that Vivian does talk about the fact that there is a possibility of more Last in Line music. So we didn't really get into that very much, but in my book, that is very cool. Would very much be looking forward to more music from Last in Line. Of course, you know, part of the big question is the fact that now with Jimmy Bain no longer with us, that does leave a gap in the bass playing. I think that's also brought the project down a little bit. And, you know, I really can't blame those guys for that either. They, you know, went in, had a great experience making this album. Jimmy's playing on the album is fantastic. Really looking forward to going out and touring all of this music live, letting everybody hear it. Now, unfortunately, Jimmy is no longer with us. And I mean, goddamn, it has been a year of losing people left and right, hasn't it? But nonetheless, great release from the guys in Last in Line. Urge you again, pick that one up. Pick up the deluxe CD DVD edition of it. So let's get into a little talk with Vivian Campbell about Last in Line.
Wide eyes open, black eyed truth. How'd I end up here with everything to lose?
Vivian, how you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, yourself.
I'm all right. I don't get to talk to Irishmen very often on the show. I think Robin McCall.
I hear an accent there.
Yeah, I'm from Waterford.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, the only Irish guy I've had on is Robin McCauley, who I'm sure you know.
Oh, well, he's from Navan, right?
Yeah, he is. And he's singing with Andrew Freeman at the moment.
Yeah, that's right, out in Vegas, right?
Yeah, have you ever seen the show?
I have not seen the show.
All right. Okay. So I'm here with my co-host, Scott.
Hey, Vivian. Obviously, I'm not from Ireland.
Scott.
You can tell from the accent.
Yes,
it's purebred Boston.
Oh, sorry. Well, a wicked pisser. That's close enough.
There you go. Awesome. Well, great. It's great to have you on the show. Let's get into what you came here for. So, of course, we've got Vivian Campbell on the show to talk about the fantastic new release, Last in Line. And, of course, that he's been able to once again saddle up 729-87537. And we're all very happy about that.
Yes, indeed. 729-87537 was in storage for many, many, many years. Bought that guitar when I was 15. I formed my first band, Sweet Savage, back in Northern Ireland. And brought that guitar to Los Angeles when we wrote and recorded the Holy Diver album with Dio in 82, and actually toured with that guitar in 83 on the Holy Diver tour. It was the only guitar I had, which is why I know the serial number, because I had to put in an awful lot of work to buy it. So I became very invested in it, but it seemed appropriate to bring it back out again for this project, you know, seeing as I was revisiting that part of my life.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, for me as a guitar player as well, I could really get into that whole feeling as well, because, you know, I can remember one of my Charvel Model 1s that I played with a band through a good chunk of the 80s. And then after that, I moved to a different band, started playing a Les Paul. But whenever I go back to want to play songs from that first original band, it always feels better when I go back and shoulder that Charvel again. It just seems right. So to hear you talk about the fact you pulled this one out and, you know, what it means to you and all that, and how it goes into the music, that definitely spoke to me.
Yeah, it just felt appropriate, you know. I mean, I've kind of played it a couple of times over the ensuing decades, but, you know, I've got a lot of Les Pauls now, and I have others that are much, much better, to be honest, you know. I thought, okay, this guitar, maybe its time isn't right yet. But when I first started playing again with Vinny and Jimmy back in 2011, just for fun, we were just jamming. I just thought, you know, I'm gonna bring that guitar, and so I dug it out of storage. And funny enough, Jimmy showed up with his Yamaha BB3000, you know, which is another blast from the past, you know, that Jimmy played back in the Dio days. So, and even Vinny joined the party. He started once he saw these guitars, he started hunting around in his garage to bring out the drums that he'd worked on the Dio records with.
Wow.
So, yeah, I don't know. We were just being stupid, you know, but that guitar does mean a lot to me. You know, it's like I said, the guitar I bought when I was 15, and I had to work every weekend, every summer holiday, you know, for like a year and a half. And just, I put in a mad amount of physical labor to actually pay for that guitar. And the fact that, you know, it was with me for Sweet Savage and the early Dio stuff, you know, just, there's a lot of history in it. So it seemed appropriate.
Yeah. Vivian, you said in a recent interview on Guitar World that after you toured with Lizzie, you rediscovered playing Angry with your Les Paul again. I'm just wondering, what made you fall out of love with playing that way anyway?
Well, it wasn't that I fell out of love. I just didn't have a need to, you know. I've been with Def Leppard now for 24 years, and the challenge in Def Leppard, it exercises a different muscle. It's all about the singing. You know, and I do like to think of myself as a rounded musician. You know, I started as a guitar player, and that was my sole focus when I was in my teenage years. I had no interest in what the singer was doing or what the lyric was about. It was all about guitar to me, and, you know, the guitar riffs and the interesting guitar parts, and especially the guitar solos. You know, but then in my early 20s, I started to actually pay a bit more attention and become a bit more rounded and try and hone my craft more as a songwriter instead of just as a riff writer. And I became really interested in singing, and I started listening to a lot of different genres of music and not just hard rock. You know, I really remember in my early 20s being seduced by the sound of Motown and, you know, just going out and buying loads of cassettes, as it was back in those days, and Elvis and all sorts of stuff, you know, and different kinds of pop music. I just really wanted to expand my knowledge and my horizons and my ambitions. But guitar was always my first love and my first focus. And it's something that I actually find really easy to do, you know, but in Leppard for the last 24 years, it's not that challenging, the guitar parts, you know. I'm not the only guitar player in the band. I mean, Phil you know, has been with the band 10 years longer than I have, you know. Mm. Phil's been with Def Leppard for 34 years, you know. So he obviously plays the majority of the solos, because the majority of the songs that we still play in Def Leppard to this day predate my involvement. I mean, they're all the classic songs from the 80s before I was with the band. So Phil played those solos on the record, so he absolutely is entitled to play them live, you know.
Yeah.
It would be ridiculous for him not to. So, you know, I don't get to play a lot of guitar in Def Leppard, but I get to sing a hell of a lot. So I've really been more focused on being a writer and a singer for the last 24 years. But doing that brief tour with Lizzy in 2011 really reconnected me to my first love, you know, because here I was on stage playing with Brian Downey and Scott Gorham, playing Black Rose and Emerald and Jailbreak and, you know, Don't Believe a Word, and all these great songs, great riffs and great solos. And it totally just transported me back to being 16 again in my bedroom, just trying to really learn how to play guitar. And so I came off of that tour just wanting to play like that more and more. And that's when I called Vinny and I called Jimmy, and I hadn't seen them much over the years. I mean, we were always, you know, good friends, but we didn't see each other that often. And, I just asked them, I said, you know, do you want to get together in a rehearsal room and just play for fun? And fortunately, they both were agreeable to that. And we started playing. And at that stage, it had been about 27 years since we played together. And I tell you, it could have been 27 seconds, because as soon as we plugged in and played, we were transported back to 1983. I mean, it was the sound of the original Dio band. And we all just got goosebumps and we got so excited. So we played for an hour or two, and it was Vinny who suggested, he said, this would be so much better if we had a singer to just round it out. And he said, I know this great young singer, Andrew Freeman, and Andrew was living in LA at the time. He's in Vegas now, obviously, but he was close by, so we called him. Andrew comes down, and as soon as I heard Andrew sing, that's when I had the idea to actually go and do some gigs, because the sound of Jimmy and Vinny and I playing was unmistakably the sound of the first three Dio records. But the voice that Andrew brought was nothing like Ronnie, a whole different tonality, but very, very powerful and very passionate, very strong, as you need to be to sing on top of Vinny and Jimmy and I. And it was something different, you know? And I thought, this is interesting. And you have the early Dio band with a singer who takes it in a slightly different direction. So, you know, if Andy had come in and sounded like Ronnie, if he had a similar tonality, he was a clone, that would have been weird and creepy, and I would never have wanted to do anything with it. But the fact that it was different sounding is what gave me the initial idea. And I must confess, I didn't give any thought at all to the name for the band. I mean, it had been about a year since Ronnie had passed away at that stage, and Jimmy and Vinny and I were the last in line. You know, and it just made perfect sense. I said, let's go out and do some gigs, and let's call it Last in Line, because we're the last in line, you know, and that record was very much part of our heritage too.
Yeah.
So and that was it. When we first started doing it, we had just that limited ambition to just play some local shows for fun, and that's all we did for a couple of years, and it started to grow. We got offered the chance to play and in Japan, and off the back of that, we got offered a record deal by Frontiers, and they said, if you're interested in writing and recording new music, we'll give you some chance to do it. So here we are.
Yeah. Now, I am curious, Vivian, did you submit any of these ideas for the Def Leppard album that came out at the end of last year?
No, not at all. No, it's a totally different thing.
Okay.
None of these songs were really preconceived ideas. They all grew out of jamming.
Okay.
You know, just like we did, we approached it in exactly the same way that we did the Holy Diver record, in that Jimmy and Vinny and myself would go into a rehearsal room in an afternoon, and somebody would have an idea to get the ball rolling, and if we didn't, we'd just start playing, and something would happen. We'd inspire each other. I mean, when Vinny lays down a beat, it inspires me to play something all the time, and the same with Jimmy. Jimmy was always a very, very creative person. He was constantly sparking ideas. Mm. So we would always come up with something. And a few hours later, Ronnie would come into the rehearsal room and we'd play, and we'd say, Ronnie, we get this idea. We hear this as being a verse. We hear this as a bridge and this is a chorus. And sometimes Ronnie would say, I don't really hear that. Why don't you try this and try that? And then other times Ronnie would say, yeah, okay, that sounds good. And he'd start looking through his lyric books, and within an hour or so, he'd come up with something. He'd be scribbling away, and then he'd step up to the mic and he'd start singing. And by 11 o'clock or midnight that night, we'd have a song.
Mm.
And it was that easy and that simple. And that's exactly what we did on this record. We'd just go in. Sometimes I'd have an idea for a riff. Sometimes Jimmy'd have something, sometimes Vinny would. But more often than not, we'd just start playing until we hit something and we go, oh, that sounds interesting. Let's do that. Where could we go next? You know. So it was a really organic process and very, very easy. And great fun. I mean, no pressure at all. But and this was all done around the same time that I was working on the new Def Leppard record. But no, I didn't have any ideas for this that I brought across to Def Leppard. Leppard's a very, very different kind of thing. And to be honest, I'm just talking about that subject. I actually had very, very little to do with this new Def Leppard record, which is very ironic because I genuinely, honestly, hand on heart, believe that it's the best record the band has made in the 24 years I've been with Leppard, but it's the one that I've had the least to do with. So I think the universe is trying to tell me something. You know, I should butt out of their business and just let them write the songs, you know?
Yeah, Vivian, actually, the two songs you co-wrote, the last two, are probably the best on the album.
Well, thank you. That's very charitable, should I say so, Richie. But, you know, it is all around. It's a great Def Leppard record.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree.
But Leppard's a very different thing. I mean, Leppard's a very diverse band. You know, Last in Line does one thing. It's just hard rock. It's straight up hard rock.
Yeah.
Whereas with Leppard, it's not that simple. You know, there's a couple of rock songs, and then we got to divert into this genre and then into that one. You know, it's a very multifaceted creative process making a Def Leppard record. You know, making the Last in Line record is easy peasy by comparison, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, lots of outstanding, you know, moments on the new album. You know, for me as a guitar player and liking how things can go out and be less than perfect and speak to you, I love the fact that on Blame It On Me, I can actually hear your fingers slide across the strings sometimes on the wound strings. I love that I can hear that.
Oh, that squeak?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even hear that until after the record was mixed. It slid by me, and I'm going, what is that? You know?
That was great.
I love it, and now I expect to hear it every time. Yeah, you see, I'm a big fan of that sort of stuff, too. I love the noise in between the schmutz that goes with it all. You know, rock and roll shouldn't be pretty. It shouldn't be sanitized. You know, it needs to have character, and I just love it when that kind of stuff happens. But that was actually by accident, not design.
Yeah. Well, I was like, great. Jeff didn't scrub it out. I love that. Like you said, it lends that like rock and roll element.
Well, the other thing is though, because it's so easy to sanitize records nowadays. Yeah. I mean, that's part of the problem with modern records is because we record in a computer age. You know, stuff. It's too easy to correct stuff. You know, and that's part of the bigger problem, I think, with a lot of modern music is that, you know, if your drummer's a little bit out of time, if he's a little ahead or a little behind, there's a tendency to want to put it on the grid and correct it. If your singer's a little bit off, there's that tendency to want to constantly auto-tune it till it's perfect, you know. And that's not what makes great music. It's the human element that actually speaks to us, you know. It's the idiosyncrasies that make records and musicians
absolutely
great. You know, you want to hear that personality. So I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah. And of course the other thing is Star Maker. Oh my god, it's just the Jimmy's bass sound is unbelievable. It's just like it wraps you in this envelope of like musical comfort food, and it just makes that song so damn powerful. I can't stop listening to that song just because I absolutely love the bass sound on there, and then how you interplay with it, sometimes up higher, sometimes, you know, doing the same thing with it, but just that whole song and the way it was put together, it's like just such a powerful song, but it just has this incredible warmth to it.
Thank you. make me a star. Star maker.
Thank you. I mean, again, like all these songs, it was just a collaborative thing. You know, I had the first riff, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I just started playing it, and whereas most bass players would have just played the same thing,
right?
Jimmy started playing G, C, you know, he started playing these total big football, these whole notes, you know?
And yeah.
It was just such an inspired part, and you know, we had that riff for a while, and we recorded and we sent it to Andy, because at this time Andy had moved to Vegas, and then we had another writing session the following week, and Andy drove down, and he came in, and this was the first time we were hearing Andy's lyric ideas and melody ideas for the song. And I can't remember who, if it was Vinny or Andy, one of the two of them suggested that we put that gap before the choruses, and after we did, I was like, whoa, it added so much impact and so much power to the downbeat of the chorus to do that. It was such a great idea, you know, so it was all very, very collaborative and very spontaneous, the way we put this record together, you know, and there's great pleasure in that for me, you know, and like I said, it's a very, very different thing to how a lot of records are made. You know, a lot of people put a lot more thought and time into things, and a lot of people subscribe to the belief that if something comes out quick, it can't be very good, you know, that you really have to labor over something, and that's not always the way. Sometimes the best stuff just falls out of you.
That's right.
And making this record, so many of the songs just happen like that, you know.
Yeah, so Vivian, the album's been on the shelf for a long time. Like, I think we spoke to Jeff Pilson about a year ago, and so it's been sitting on the shelf for about a year. Did you ever, over that time, think, God, I've come up with this part now, I could go back in and put it here, or I've got an idea for another song that we could maybe add to it? Or like, was it tough to leave it there for that long?
Not really, no. I mean, sometimes I listen and I think, I could have played that a little better, or I could have done this, but you're talking about minor little things. So, I mean, nothing that ever bothered me. But what it did inspire me to do was actually come up with ideas for the next album.
Nice.
You know, and I've been, for the last year, I've been coming up with little riff ideas, and I know right away when I come up with them if they're appropriate for Def Leppard or for Last in Line. There's never any ambiguity, nothing in between. It's like, this is obviously for Last in Line, or this is obviously a Def Leppard sort of idea. And I just record them on my iPhone, and you know, I genuinely was so excited to get on to making record number two with Last in Line, and now, unfortunately, you know, we find ourselves at this very bittersweet crossroads. You know, the record was released a week ago, and Jimmy died 5 weeks or 6 weeks ago. You know, it's just, he got to the 11th hour. And as you said, we sat on the album for a year. We didn't release it deliberately, because we all believed in it that much that we wanted to wait until our opportunities were there for us to tour and promote it. And it was particularly sad, you know, we just got there and Jimmy just didn't quite make it to the finish line, you know, so we don't know what the future holds for us, but, you know, at least we got to go out for Jimmy. He got to go out on this record, which he really, really believed in, so much so that he went and got a tattoo.
Yeah.
The only tattoo Jimmy Bean had on his body when he died was Last in Line.
Wow.
He got it in his mid-60s. That's how much he was invested in this band, you know. So
and you had to go
sad.
You had to go out and buy the album, Vivian, I believe.
I did go out and buy it. Yeah, well, you know, our record label's in Italy, And it's, you know, it's not a big budget kind of concern. So I know they're sending us a box with some CDs, but maybe it's on a ship somewhere in the middle of the ocean. I don't know. All I know is that the record came out on Friday, last Friday. And on Saturday, it suddenly dawned on me I didn't have a copy and I needed to go out and buy one. So I went out to Best Buy, and it was very sad. I mean, the record industry is in the toilet. I mean, and it's no wonder you can't even find a record that had only been out for 24 hours. I had to hunt behind. I found it behind Little Wayne on the rack section, you know, buried at the back of the rack. I mean, that's sad. It wasn't even in the rock section. It wasn't in the new releases. You know, it took me about 15 minutes to find it. It was embarrassing, but there you go.
Yeah, and I was, Richie told me that, and I'm thinking, oh, man, I am glad that I went out and I actually bought it and that Frontiers hadn't already sent it to me, because then I would have been like, crap, I've got it, and they didn't even send it to Vivian. But no, I went out and bought my own copy as well, and I did get the deluxe one, and I have to compliment you. The bonus DVD on here is probably the best bonus DVD I've ever had with a special edition digipack. Great stuff. And also, I got to compliment you that with, you know, a lot of the stuff that you discussed on here, definitely you guys had some big balls. And, you know, if anyone gives you any shit about that, I mean, they have no reason to at all. I think that, you know, everything you guys said was with honesty and integrity. And I just wanted to compliment you on that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's been an ongoing battle for years, you know, and I did add fuel to the fire. I mean, I was guilty of saying some shit about Ronnie in the press, and Ronnie was guilty about saying some ugly things about me, too. But
yeah,
and it's never a good idea to air your dirty laundry in public. But, you know, the whole Dio thing, you know, people for years and years saying, oh, it's about money. It was never about money.
Right.
It was always about principle. Money just happened to be the issue, you know?
Yeah.
Those early Dio records, we wrote and recorded that as a band, and that's what Ronnie wanted. And somehow or other, within those first 3 or 4 years and those 3 records, you know, the business came between Ronnie and the rest of us, you know, that he was being pushed more and more by management into being a solo artist. And Ronnie didn't want it to be a solo act. He wanted it to be a band, you know.
Right.
But the agreement that Ronnie had made with the rest of us was that by the third album, it would be an equitable situation. And we literally worked for less than the road crew.
Right.
You know, we're on stage playing to 10, 15,000 people in Madison Square Garden, the LA Forum, around the world, whatever, sold a million or so records. And to be on stage playing songs that you wrote, and being paid less than the roadies,
yeah.
You know, it was a little bit wrong, you know. So but it was okay because we were working to a common goal. We believed in what had been told to us, and,
right.
And I was just the squeaky wheel. I was the first one that confronted Ronnie with it,
yeah.
And I wouldn't let it go because I believe in principle. He looked me in the eye and he shook my hand, and we had a gentleman's agreement, and I hold my end of the bargain. I expect other people to do the same, and so you know,
right.
It just. It's unfortunate. It's sad, you know, but I genuinely believe that I never saw Ronnie again afterwards, but I never spoke to him. But I do honestly believe that if we bumped into each other on the street, we would have gone to the pub and we would have had a pint and we would have worked out our differences man to man. And, you know, maybe there would have been another record to be made with Ronnie,
yeah.
And the original band. But because I know that he knows, or that he knew the magic of that original band. He knew what it was, you know,
yeah.
And it's unfortunate that it just fell apart. The wheels came off, you know.
Yeah. It's sad that to know that Thomas Mengucci made more than you did on the tour, but, you know, I do like the fact that it on the DVD that, because it's always been that, like, you've stood on your own almost as far as in the press and with the trolls and all that, and what you've always said about it being, you know, the fact that it's the principle of it. But to actually have the rest of the Dio band sitting there with you and basically getting it from all 3 members, I'm like, I was like, great, you know, Vivian's been vindicated on this, and they did it in a real honest way with a lot of integrity. And I just, like I said, I really liked it, and I urge anybody to buy the deluxe edition and really get to hear that and all the other great stuff you guys talk about as well.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you like the DVD stuff. When we were first asked to do that, to go along with the record,
yeah.
They sent us a couple of samples of other bands on Frontiers that have done the DVD packages, and it was all very, very glamorous with nice lighting and hair and makeup and stuff like
yeah.
that. And when they started filming us, I mean, we are not a pretty band, you know, so we didn't even make the effort. So I'll apologize for that in advance. You know?
No, I love that. I love the fact that it was like the joke about, is it time for a break? Can we go for coffee? And then like Jimmy's like getting tangled up in his mic and he's getting all antsy, like, I want to get out of here. And I love that.
I know. Well, it's very real. It is very honest. I'll give you that. Yes.
Yeah.
Warts and all.
Yeah. So
what can you do?
Final question from me, Vivian. Now, I actually spoke to Kevin Valentine 2 weeks ago about the Shadow King.
Oh, lovely.
And he told me to say...
I haven't talked to Kevin in a few years. I hope he's doing
well. Yeah, he told me to say hello to you, by the way. And we spoke for about half an hour about the album, right? And he was a great guy to talk to. But I don't know whether you've read Lou Graham's book or not, but there's a couple of lines in there.
I have not, no.
All right, I just want to read these out to you and I want to get your reaction on them. So I'm quoting, so Shadow King released a self-titled album that was produced by Keith Olsen many years earlier. Unfortunately, Keith was going through a messy divorce when he was helping us produce the Shadow King album, and the results showed in our finished, or should I say unfinished, product. Do you agree with that?
I must admit, I did not know that Keith was going through a divorce. I do know that he wasn't present, but I also know that Lou wasn't present there either. And I do strongly agree that the record came out nothing at all like what it should have been. When that project first started, I had met Lou by playing. I played three or four guitar solos on his second solo album, and the producer, Peter Wolf, had called me in, and that's when I first met him. And Lou and I struck up a friendship as a result of that, and we started talking, and we both realized that we both loved Free. That, you know, I love Paul Kossoff's guitar tone and vibrato, and Paul Rodgers was probably his biggest hero. So we started talking about, oh, it'd be great to do like a heavy blues band, guitar, bass, drums, vocalists. And that's what we were intending to do. That's what I thought we were going to in the studio to do. But I don't listen to the Shadow King record and hear any of that at all.
I don't either.
No, me neither.
There's no cost in there.
It's a long story, but there were a lot of personal things going on with everyone, I think, when we were making that record, and we all got way, way off track. You know, I just know that Keith wasn't in the studio very much at all, and I know that Lou was in the studio even less. You know,
okay.
Lou was dealing with a lot. I haven't read his book, so I don't know what it says, but he was dealing with a lot of his own personal demons at the time, and that definitely distracted him from the job at hand, and the record was not what it should have been and what it could have been.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, again, Vivian, thanks for taking some time today to come on the show, talk to us about the Last in Line album. Great album, and, you know, I would say that we should all, like, take the opportunity to maybe tell Jeff Pilson, like, all right, enough of the Foreigner thing. Why don't you go play bass for Last in Line? Because I think he would be perfect if you had to replace a guy. It's got to be Pilson. I mean, he's so damn easygoing, fun guy.
Yeah.
And he knows the stuff already.
That would be a great choice. Yeah, I agree with that. But you know, Jeff's very committed to his day job with Foreigner, and they do a lot of shows every year. So it would be difficult, but we'll see. We don't actually know what's going to happen with Last in Line. Other than these two festivals we're going to do, I mean, it's all so up in the air, you know.
Yeah.
So who knows what the future holds?
So you're out with Leopard in May again. You've rescheduled the dates, and you turn the states into summer.
We're out with Leopard again May, and then we do have a summer tour that's going to be announced soon, starting June. So it'll run right the way through October.
Yeah, well, hopefully you'll play up our way again up in Mansfield. I've gone a few times. You've been over.
Yeah, it's always great to play up there. So, you know, I'll be busy with Leopard for a big chunk of the year, you know. So even if we wanted to do something further with Last in Line, it would have to be the end of the year, like late October onwards.
Yeah,
you know, something could happen.
Yeah.
You know, because we were supposed to be on tour right now, and it didn't feel right to do it. So
if that ever happens,
it wouldn't be before the end of the year.
Yeah.
But it definitely would be great to have you guys go out and actually have people hear these things live, because, you know, as so much spontaneity it's in the studio, it means that same kind of spontaneity is going to come off live as well. And I just think these songs are just made to live and breathe live.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great. It'd be lovely to play them. You know, it'd be sad to not be playing them with Jimmy. But,
sure. Yep.
You know, it'd be done in his honor if we do.
Yeah. All right, Vivian, like I said, thank you very much for taking some time today to talk to us. I know you've been super busy doing press for this, but we definitely appreciate getting a little time to talk all about Last in Line with you.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure, lad.
Yep. All right. All right, Viv. Take care. Cheers. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So there you go. Update on everything going on with Last in Line. So as Vivian mentioned, they don't have an actual website, but you can hook up with them on Facebook, facebook.com/lastinlinerocks, as well as on Twitter. Same deal, twitter.com/lastinlinerocks. So why don't we just go right into our second guest, and that is Rayman James from Malice. And of course, people hear Malice and they think about Jay Reynolds and West Coast band, but I am talking about the band from America's Heartland, from Minneapolis, Minnesota. These guys have been around for several years. Back in 2012, they put out their first long player entitled Triumph and the Glory. And these guys are proof positive that power metal is alive and well in the Midwest. This is one of the bands that Online Metal Promotions hooked me in with, and I was actually kind of bummed in the fact that they weren't one of the bands that was on the compilation that we just did at the end of last year with OMP, because they would definitely be one of the bands that I would have played on our OMP special if they had been on that comp. So also, before we roll this, just want to let you know that as we get into the interview, it's not your brain playing tricks on you. You do hear a rhythmic beeping in the background, especially when I'm talking. And I actually totally forgot about it until I was actually editing this thing. I'm like, what the hell do I keep hearing? But anyways, there was a humidifier here in the studio that ran out of water and started going into alarm. And I had no freaking idea what it was, because it's never gone into alarm before. And I can't very well just stop an interview to go check shit out. So that's what you do here. It's not your mind playing tricks on you. I apologize for that in advance, but there is this low-level little rhythmic beeping going on in the background. You just don't know what you're going to hear in the background here between dog's claws on hardwood floors or birds. And now I've added rhythmic beeping. So let's let you guys hear all about Malice here right from the man himself, Rayman James, guy who founded the band. Talk a little bit about his gear, about the music, and play you some Malice music as well.
This is Rayman James of Malice, and you are listening to Focus on Metal.
All right, guys. Good deal for you this week, as I am on the line with Rayman James from Malice. No, not that Malice. We're talking about the Malice that matters, the one from Minnesota. How are we doing, Rayman?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I don't know what the hell it is in the water in Minnesota, but you are the second band this month that I've come across. It's been like, holy shit, like power metal is alive and well out in Minnesota.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. We got a pretty good power metal scene here.
It's amazing, and you guys, too. I'm a big Hammerfall fan, and listening to a lot of your songs, I'm like, holy shit, you are like the American Hammerfall.
Yeah, I'm a big Hammerfall fan, too.
I wish more people in the U.S. knew about those guys, because just an amazing, amazing band.
Yeah, they are. I mean, the last time I went to a Hammerfall show in the Minneapolis area, I think there was like 200 people there. So it wasn't a very good turnout, but I mean, as far as an American turnout for them, I guess it's all right.
That's pretty good for an American turnout. Cool. So, I know that you guys have been around for a while, and 2012, you put out your first full release, Triumph and the Glory?
Yes, sir.
Pretty damn awesome album there. Just front to back, like 9 tracks of just absolute awesome, awesome metal. You know, you guys, I really think that you put like bands like Manowar to shame, and, you know, they're talking about true metal and all that, but man, you guys just have them beat.
I mean, Manowar was a big influence of mine pretty much my whole life growing up. I'm sure because you get the Hammerfall influences there, and, you know, a lot of people listen and they get the Iron Maiden and Judas Priest influences. You know, it's like everybody I talk to has a different one of those. It's usually one of those four bands that they bring up as Manowar, Hammerfall, Priest, or Maiden that, you know, they kind of compare me to. And I'm just like, well, those were my four biggest influences.
Yeah. So. And obviously a little bit of King Diamond in there as well. I love on Malice that you have that little part where it just reminds me of the King, where you say Malice. It sounds pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like that. I don't know. I mean, I guess I haven't really been into King Diamond before. I mean, kind of started listening to him lately because I got a friend, Sean Peck, that seems to be really into it. So.
Sean's a good friend of ours, and he's definitely into the King.
Yeah, so I kind of started listening to King Diamond a little bit lately because of that. But the album was it went pretty well, and, you know, right now we're in the studio recording our next one, and hopefully that one's going to be even better.
Nice.
You know, Because I wrote the first one pretty much by myself, and now Sheridan, my guitar player, he's writing it all with me. I still do all the lyric writing, and, you know, him and I do about 50-50 on the music. I'll come to him with the idea on the music, and we'll sit down and kind of go through it or something like that, or I'll have a chord progression laid out and kind of play something for him, and, you know, he'll add to it, and it's kind of how we go about that.
Nice, yeah. Now, that's actually a pretty cool way to do it. Now, are you feeling like this one's going a little bit differently as far as sound-wise now that you're collaborating?
I guess, you know, it's got his influences on it a little bit more. It's going to have a little bit more of my changing influences, you know. The first one is, you know, heavily, heavily influenced by Manowar. I mean, this is going to be kind of, to me, it's going to be more of the same. You know, it's going to, I guess it's just, it's still going to be more what I have been influenced my whole life, you know. It's still going to be what I am, you know. My music is just, it reflects who I am.
Right.
And so I can't say that it's really going to be different. It's, I guess, you know, I'm going to have some fast songs, some slow songs. I don't know. You know, if I put it out there and we have all fast songs on it, then everybody's going to say that we changed our sound, but we haven't really. I'm still writing slow songs because I got about 4 albums worth of material written right now.
Wow.
And it's just picking and choosing which songs I want to put on this one.
Yeah, yeah.
And which songs I feel like are going to go together well.
Yeah. Well, I will say Triumph from the Glory had a pretty good mix of stuff on there. And you can, you know, definitely see a lot of your influences. But also the fact that you know, you weren't afraid to put on a song like Last Try or Valhalla Waits, where you've got more keyboard and stuff in there as well.
Yep.
Where some other bands that weren't as confident about their songs would have been more like, oh, no, we're just going to put all of this one kind of song. But you mix it up pretty nicely.
Oh, yeah, that was something I really wanted to have in there. And something I wanted to have in on the first album so we could establish that, you know, we like to have the full orchestra thing, because I actually, I don't know if you realize it, but on both those two songs, Triumph and Glory, Valhalla Waits and Last Try, we actually had cellos and violins in there.
Mm.
And I brought in real cellos and real violin players to play on it.
Wow.
So, yeah, and then I played the keyboard part for Last Try as well, so... Yeah, it was fun, and hopefully we're going to have some more of that. And I mean, I got another song that I got written that's going to be kind of an epic about the life of William Wallace, and that we're going to have bagpipes and the whole friggin' works on it when we finally do record that. So
wow, bagpipes. This is the second time this week of talking to a metal artist that bagpipes has come up. I was talking to Flo from Sinbreed the other day, and I'm like, dude, where did the bagpipes come from in that song? So wow. Must be the new, that must be like the new upcoming metal instrument.
Well, you know, I think Teresa's is the first one I've ever seen with bagpipes in a band. But for me, I wouldn't put it in there unless, well, I guess AC/DC did it as well.
They
but
did,
I wouldn't
yeah.
have put it in there. But I mean, it's about, the song is about William Wallace.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
You can't have a song about a Scottishman without having some bagpipes in there, you know?
Very true. Very true. So when you do the new album, are you going to make any videos to go along with it?
Yep. We will be making a video. I haven't decided for which song we're going to do it yet. You know, the last album we released, I only had one song that I could have done it for, and that was Sons of Rock, because I didn't have a budget to hire an entire army.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most of the other songs were about, you know, battle and wars, and, you know, I kind of try and paint a scene with the lyrics that, you know, an army going into battle, and I couldn't really do that visually in a video, have a whole army. I certainly could not afford to hire that many extras to dress up like Vikings and have a battle.
Right, right,
so,
absolutely.
I mean, yeah, Sons of Rock was kind of just it, and now it's kind of become our anthem. It's really, you know, it's one the fans really get into when we play it live too.
Yeah,
and we basically play that at every show, and everybody's singing along, and it's kind of an easy one to sing along to as well, and, you know, it's kind of taken on a life of its own as well, because you know, myself and Sheridan and our singer David Whitmer, we're all like really into, you know, Harley Davidsons and motorcycles and everything, and now we're starting our own motorcycle club called the Sons of Rock. So it's
nice. Yeah, and that's a great video too. I like that you got kind of like three different things going on within it, and you got a little bit of humor in there as well, and you've got the metal and the whole thing. And for, you know, a video that you made on a budget and stuff, you really wouldn't know it looking at it.
Did the filming and the directing of it, he did a very good job. And then we tried to throw in, because, you know, it's something that I'm rather passionate about, is I guess I don't know how you would phrase it to sound correctly, but, you know, I'm against violence against women and children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's, we tried to throw that in the video, and I think we got some links on the YouTube site for when you're watching the video to donate to different stopping domestic violence organizations and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we try and give back to the community a little bit. And, I mean, that's one of the things that I'm kind of passionate or adamant about. You know?
No, it's good. I mean, that's one thing that I think metal fans are usually pretty good about as well, is doing stuff like that. I know that, you know, right now Night Demon is doing their Metal Cares t-shirt campaign they do every year and stuff. And
yep.
You see a lot of metal bands doing stuff like that, which is great.
Oh, yeah. And you had talked about the local scene here, and that's, we have a lot of that going on. I mean, anytime there's something, there's always some, you always see metal and rock bands putting together a charity for, you know, a certain person. If somebody gets cancer or somebody, you know, something happens to anybody, you know, everybody kind of bands together in the community and tries to put on some kind of charity and raise some money.
Yep, absolutely. That's always a cool thing. I remember a buddy of mine and one of his kids came down with leukemia, and that's what we did, is a bunch of us bands all got together and raised a crap load of money doing like a whole day of a poker run and then all bands. So, you know, a good way to raise money and also to have a lot of fun doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, and I warned you in the email, too, man, we got to talk about that bass. double splits on there. I was like, being a former bass player, you know, do guitar now, but, you know, I always love the split coils. But to see one with the double splits and listen to those tunes, too, and go like, God damn, that thing just sounds awesome.
Yeah, Yeah, you know what? That one actually wasn't even on the album because I just got that 2 years ago now,
mm-hmm.
or a year ago. Yeah, the first album, I recorded it with my well, now it's my number two bass, is a Trey band. And I really liked that one. But then I go to Romania a lot, and I went over to, I actually went to the warehouse where the factory, he just makes custom guitars for people, and his name is Grossman, Christian Grossman or Grossu or something like that, but it's Grossman Guitars.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped by, he invited me to come to the factory, and I was took a tour, and I sat down, and I started playing one of his bass guitars, and I was like, this is the greatest bass guitar I've ever played. I just, like, I held one note, and it sustained forever. I fell in love, and I ordered a guitar right then. And I said, you know, he was the first person, you know, I'd been trying to get a custom guitar for years, and he was the first one that let me design it from start to finish 100%. You know, I sat down and I drew out the shape of the body, I drew out the shape of the headstock, I mean, everything on there. I mean, got to choose everything about that guitar. So, I mean, I definitely highly, highly recommend Grossman Guitars out of Romania.
Yeah, and it is, it's sharp looking too. And it's pretty cool because it looks, you know, there's some people that, like, that instrument just, it becomes like part of their signature, and it just looks so natural, you know, like.
It really is. I mean, and, you know, it has so fucking much power too, because it blows everyone away. I mean, I play at different festivals and, you know, where everything is backlined and everybody's using the same equipment. And I get up there after all the bands have been playing and they got the amp cranked all the way up, the bass amp cranked all the way up. I get in there and I plug in and I got to turn it all the way down because I'm overloading the house speakers. And it's just, I'm like, oh, it's a very powerful and very, very loud guitar.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I've played with active pickups before, but this one is, I don't know, it's like super active or something, because it blows everyone away.
Yeah, it's cool when you get like a bass like that. I had a really cool bass back in the 80s that had actually been reworked by Grover Jackson, and I don't know what it was on that one, but yeah, I plugged that one in, and it just was just so much louder than any other bass I had, and sound guys would like freaking hate me. And, just absolutely love that bass.
I love that, though. I mean, I like being loud. I love being louder than everyone else, and I hate being told to turn down, though.
Yeah, right. Well, the thing, too, is you guys...
He comes up, and he showed me the how I was redlining everything, and I'm like, oh, well, all right, I don't want to blow up your equipment, so...
Yeah, and I mean, and the fact that you guys are a three-piece, too, that the fact that you can so adequately round out that whole end of the spectrum and fill it out behind the guitar, it really helps.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as, like, touring stuff, you got anything planned at all for that?
I'm working on putting together a tour for this coming fall,
mm-hmm.
and I'm trying to decide East Coast or West Coast right now. I'm kind of, I got one show that it's all kind of pending on that I can't really say mm-hmm. yet. So, I mean, if that comes through, then it's going to be the West Coast.
Uh-huh.
So, if not, then I might be looking to the East Coast.
Oh, that'd be good. Yeah. I like the East Coast leg, 'cause I'm just outside of Boston. So East Coast works for me.
Yeah. Otherwise, I mean, we're trying to get on some of these bigger festivals. We're headlining the second stage at Rockfest, the final night, July 16th, and that's in Cadott, Wisconsin. I mean, that's I think, you know, Johnny Depp's band Hollywood Vampires, or Alice Cooper's band Hollywood Vampires, is playing.
I always like to think of it as Joe Perry's band.
Whichever one of the three you want to pick.
I'm a Boston guy. It's gonna be Joe Perry.
I didn't even know who they were when, you know, I was like, looked at it, and I'm like, I don't know who they are, and then I clicked on it. Oh, I'm like, oh, I know who they are now. Yeah. So, no, it's Five Finger Death Punch and a whole bunch of, you know, Slipknot and some other bands that are playing. I mean, should be a pretty good show.
Yeah, I know. That sounds like it's a great build to get on.
Not exactly my type of metal. I mean, it's not power metal, but...
Right.
As long as I get to play in front of people, you know, because a lot of times the fans aren't so choosy, you know. A lot of times fans are like, they'll light like any kind of metal, and I'm more like, I pretty much just like power metal.
Sure, sure. Yeah, but I mean, think of it as like an ambassador role, right? You're like, people that maybe never expose themselves to that go, wow, that's pretty freaking good. I mean, I've converted a lot of people to power metal because they've had kind of a like really screwed up idea of what the hell it is. You know what I mean? Then they get it confused with symphonic metal and all this.
Yep.
And then you play them some stuff like Hammerfall and stuff, and they go, God damn, I like this. It's like, yep, all right, go buy some.
It's like, it seems like the genre of power metal, or the definition of power metal, has changed too. Because it's like, when I was growing up, I always thought, you know, Hammerfall, Manowar, that's power metal. Mm. You know, it's powerful metal. To me, that was power metal. And now it's, like you said, it's people are saying it's like symphonic metal. And I'm just like, I don't think so. <You know? laughs>
So, you know, one thing that I can identify with, you know, reading back through your bio and stuff, is that you guys have definitely gone through a lot of different members in the band. I know it's always a pain in the ass when you think you got it right and people leave and stuff, but you've had some pretty interesting people too. And of course, one of the ones I noticed was David Reese. I'm like, holy yep. shit, they had David Reese in the band?
Yep. He recorded the song Fight with us. It was going all right with him. He was with us for 2 years. And, there was some differences, and it wasn't exactly his type of metal. And, there was quite an age difference between him and us two. And we want to keep going for the next 20, 30 years. And, you know, he's almost 60 years old already. So
yeah, right.
When he was in the band, there was like a 30-year age difference between him and, well, more than a 30-year age difference between him and the guitar player. So I think at the time Sheridan was 19 and he was 50-something. So
Yeah, that doesn't help sometimes with the chemistry at all. Yeah, that's
definitely
true.
That was just it. It was a lot about the chemistry and, and then he ended up moving out of state too, and that was kind of, you know, what ended it was when he moved away.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was interesting to work with him, and, you know.
Yeah. Well, I would say too that, I mean, I look at it and I see that it's like you and Sheridan are like the core of Malice. And
yep.
probably will always remain so. So I'm sure there was probably some little bit of friction in there too as well, where he might have considered himself, well, I'm like the real, I'm the name guy here, and he's going against the core of the band.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I don't really speak ill of anyone. I mean, even members I don't like anymore. And there is one, but it's not Reese. So
yeah.
I don't ever speak bad publicly about anyone. I mean, it's just off the air. I'll tell you the truth about anything. But no, I mean, I don't think it's good to talk about people behind their back or whatever.
Sure.
You know. So
no, I would agree with that, and it does have a way of coming back and biting you sometimes. So
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's, you know, it's interesting, too, because you listen to the stuff on Triumph and Glory, and definitely the mix on Fight, you can tell that was done, you know, a little bit differently.
Oh, yeah, that was actually recorded a year later.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was kind of a fun studio session, too. I mean, we always have a good time in the studio, but that was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and I mean, with everything you guys are putting into this, it sounds to me like you guys are really don't do a lot of this stuff like at home and bring tracks together, but you guys are really ponying up some serious cash and going into really good studios to do your stuff.
Yeah, we do. We go to Black Apple Studios in Minneapolis, and we record with a guy who's actually teaches at IPR, which is the big, you know, recording studio in Minneapolis as well. And I mean, he's probably the best engineer in the Twin Cities area, at least. Mm. But he did a real good job. And yeah, it is more expensive to actually do it that way and go into studio and do it the old fashioned way, I guess. You
yeah.
know, it's kind of the way it is now, because everybody else is kind of just recording it on their computers and then sending in tracks. And yeah, I didn't want to do that. I mean, when I was searching for a studio, I went and toured a couple studios, and everybody's kind of got these studios in their basements. And yeah, it was Chad was the first guy that we went and we're like, well, we were kind of impressed by his studio.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, I know. And I think part of what helps you, though, right, is that you don't probably have to spend as much time, because a lot of the songs, like I listen to the songs on Triumph and Glory, obviously I don't know about the new songs, but you know, a lot of them are pretty much tailor-made to go out and play live. So
yep.
It's not like you're doing a lot of extra, you know, 16 tracks of other crap behind it and stuff.
No, we don't really like to do that. I kind of have the old, you know, Man of War's always said, if you can't play it live, then don't play it in the studio. And I kind of go by that philosophy. You know, there's little things that you like to add in, like, you know, like I said, the violins and cellos and the symphony stuff, but when we go to play that live, we figure a way around it so that we can still, you know, play it live.
Right. As far as people listening and they're really interested in finding out about you guys or contacting you or any of that good stuff, as far as your web presence, where should they be heading to?
Well, you know, honestly, the best place to find us is on Facebook. If you look on Facebook under Malice Official and you send us a message there, I, you know, myself or Sheridan or our manager Jason will always get back to you within, you know, 30 minutes.
Hmm.
We also have our website, which is maliceofficial.com, which is where you can order all of our great merchandise.
And, or you can also take a tour of the Valkyrie Gallery.
Yeah, yeah, you can do that too. I got a lot more of them on Facebook though too. So. I don't get around to updating the actual website too often.
Oh yeah, I hear you on that.
But yeah, that's why I'm saying honestly, Facebook is usually the best place because it is the most interactive, and you know that's the great thing about it is people get to actually interact with bands now, and you know, kind of MySpace started that, but you know, Facebook has taken it to a whole new level. But it's cool, you know. We also get to talk to the fans and find out really what they like and you know what their feelings on the actual songs are.
Right.
I mean, I get several emails a week about, you know, Last Try. So that seems to be everybody's kind of favorite song. So
cool. Yeah, I mean, that is a good thing about Facebook or anything else like that on the net now is you guys can definitely have a lot more communication and it's easier. And I do get you about the website. I mean, every week I got to update the website for the show and it's always like, ugh, I got to go recode the page again. All right, go do it. And
yep.
There's only so many things you can do.
You know, and it's, you know, a band on a budget where basically I do most everything myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have time to constantly update the website, because it's a bit more of a process than to just go on Facebook and post a post a photo or post a quick status update, something like that, you know? Or say, hey, this is where the show that we're playing this weekend or something like that, you know?
Right, yeah. No, it is definitely easy, yeah. So, you know, before I let you go, you know, looking back at Triumph and the Glory, and I want to roll a track off of that, let everybody hear the glory that is Malice. What track would you, if you had to pick one, would you pick to say, yeah, play that track as the track for us?
You know, I kind of go with the battle being, you know, our battle hymn, you know, it's,
uh-huh.
it's our call to arms type of thing, you know, that's the one that, really gets me going, you know, but it's, everybody likes something different, so, you know?
No, that's, it's interesting. It seems like, you know, with a lot of the artists I talk to, and after doing this for 5 years, I've talked to a lot of artists, but it's always been singers, like, have a real hard time picking the track. And then after that, it's like guitar players that were heavily involved in the writing, they have the hardest time. But it's bass players always have, it's usually you talk to them and they know what track it is, like, you know, I talked to Matt Sinner about an album and boom, he'll pick out, that's the track I like. And so you exactly fit the mold again as bass player and boom, you know what track it is you like.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm also, you know, the leader of the band. So it's like I get to pick which one is our single and that's the one I picked to be the single off of that album.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I mean, there's reasons I like each song differently. You know, each song is fun for a different reason to play, you know,
sure.
And it's like the one that I liked loved the most before we recorded it is now the one I like the least. And it's kind of weird how things change like that.
And, you know, you mentioned the battle too, and I just did remind me that looking at the artwork, both for that one, the single artwork for that, as well as the artwork for the for Triumph and Glory, just really cool artwork for those.
Well, thank you. Yeah, the artwork on Triumph and Glory was done by Ken Kelly, who does the Manowar covers. He did the Kiss Destroyer cover. He's done so many other different amazing works as well. But he did that one for us, or he licensed it to us for that. So, and the single off the battle, it was designed by myself, but I had another guy, a local guy, do it here. His name was Kevin Succi. So.
Okay. I mean, they definitely fit the whole mood and everything else. And, you know, it really matches up. So I just wanted to let you know that, I'm a big album artwork guy.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So,
me too.
You know, definitely I come from the age of vinyl. I like that 12x12. But when I see some cool artwork, I always like to let people know that just really well done.
Yeah. I'm really into it. And I really, I feel it's necessary for the artwork to match the feel of the album as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, cool. Again, I thank you for taking time to talk with us tonight. You know, hit me up when you guys are ready to put the new one out, and we'll let people know that Malice has got a new one out. And, you know, if you want at that point, you can come back on. We can talk about it and really promote the hell out of it.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, Rayman.
Thank you.
Good to talk to you, and hopefully talk again soon.
Yes, sir.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Per Rayman's request from their 2012 release, Triumph and Glory, this is The Battle.
Two.
Show, like I said, with The Battle from Malice. And again, if you want to hook up with them online, it is maliceofficial.com. Same deal on Facebook, facebook.com/maliceofficial. So if you go looking up Malice Band and it comes up Malice Band Minneapolis, don't be confused by another Minneapolis band called Debbie Does Malice, which is kind of more of a metal jazz band. You want to head to maliceofficial.com, which is, of course, some very kick-ass power metal. So that will do it for this week. Big thanks to Vivian Campbell as well as Rayman James for joining us this week. Appreciate both those guys taking their time to talk with Focus on Metal. Lots of possibilities for what we will do next week. I think Richie and I have to sit down and strategize against all the audio we have recorded and really determine what needs to get played first. If we have some time-sensitive things, something else he'd rather have played first than second. But we have a lot of great interviews already recorded, ready to go for your metal listening pleasure. And also, just for a heads up for you folks that may be planning to go to the Metal Church CD release party up at the Jewel Nightclub in Manchester, New Hampshire on Friday the 25th, that Richie and I, as far as the last word from Rat Pack, would be attending that. So if you are going up to Manchester Friday night, then keep a lookout for Richie and myself. I will also be at the Satriani show at the Orpheum on the 26th, so Saturday night. So if any of you guys have got tickets to Satch on Saturday night down in Boston at the Orpheum, keep a lookout for that as well. I should be hanging out there. And Richie should be hanging out at the Satch show at the Hampton Beach Casino on April 7th. But as I said, that is a wrap for this week. Had a lot of fun putting this one together. Hope you guys had a lot of fun listening to it. Also, just want to remind you to check out the rest of our fellow shows over at BlastSyndicate.com. Those guys are always pumping out some great stuff. Also, the other day, I was emailing back and forth with the man, the myth, the legend, that would be Bob Nalbandian, asking him what the status on the documentary trilogy was. And he got back to me, let me know that the LA Metal Scene Explodes DVD should be coming out in June. That is the plan. Maybe having a premiere in April or May. And then we're looking at probably the Inside SF Metal, the third movie in that Rise of the LA Thrash Metal, that he's looking to get that out in September or October. And he definitely does want to come back on the show and let you guys know all about those two flicks. But of course, Bob is a super, super busy guy. And sometimes even despite his best intentions, where he really was planning on coming on, he just gets too busy. But I'm hoping that he's going to be able to break himself free for at least an hour or so to come on the show and let you guys and us know what is going on with the next two installments of Inside LA Metal. And you can always keep tabs on that online at metalrockfilms.com, as well as on Twitter. And he's got Inside LA Metal always posting good stuff out there as well. So with all that out of the way, I'm going to get the hell out of here. Again, been a great week, and I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Guaranteed more good stuff coming up next week. So as always, for Richie and myself and everybody else here at Focus on Metal, have yourselves a great metal week. And until we talk to you again next week, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.